This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen. And Adam, we are in the dog days of training camp at this point. The Patriots have been at it for a week. They've been in pads now for three practices. And today, I think, was the first day recording this on Wednesday where it kind of felt like the position battles and the guys that were on the bubble really started to kind of feel it a little bit. You know, I think the first couple of days, everybody was sort of easing their way back into it. Today, it was like, okay, now we need to start figuring out who's going to make this roster and who isn't, which is obviously a lot of fun. There was a lot of one-on-ones today, both offensive line versus defensive line. And we actually got, I think for the first time in camp, competitive one-on-ones of defensive backs against wide receivers. And as you could have guessed, I'm sure, for those listening, the defensive backs just dominated for about 20 straight minutes against these receivers, which I don't think is much of a surprise. But to kind of lay out what we're going to do here today, we're going to talk about some camp risers, some names that are both just playing really well, but also, you know, climbing the depth chart. But we wanted to lead with the rookies because I think that there was a lot of narratives that I personally also tweeted about too, about N'Keal Harry today and how he just had a really up and down day, had struggled with drops, mainly had four of them in competitive team drills. The good news is, Adam, is that he's getting open a lot of the time. The bad news is he's not finishing the plays. And I just think that this team overall needs him to be good and needs him to be more consistent than he's been.
Yeah, and not to make excuses for some of these guys, but at this point in camp with the weather, and especially for some of these guys' first camp, like Harry's, there's going to be days like this, you know, but you do want to see improvement. And so, you know, a day like this will sort of make you worry a little bit, but it's still so early. You want to see him against you know, players from other teams and stuff like that. And, you know, he's somebody that, you know, is still going to pass every look test. But, you know, at a certain point, you want to see like that progression that, you know, that he's getting better and better. And, you know, today was probably a setback in that regard. But, you know, at the end of the day, like we were talking about earlier before we got on here, is that they're going to need him.
Yeah.
You know? And so he's going to have to catch up fast. And so, you know, with Edelman out, that, you know, the more reps, the better. Even the bad reps are stuff he can learn from. So, you know, if he can sort of just, you know, put together a few more good days, and then once they go up against other teams and stuff like that, then, you know, he'll start to find his groove. But again, you know, what the main thing is him, you know, sort of learning the playbook, learning a few things that he does really well, and gaining some confidence. But, you know, it sounded like today was a bit of a step back for that.
Yeah, so I think the good news is a couple things. First thing, so his last drop of the day, which I think really caught everybody's attention because it was just it just kind of snowballed on him at that point. He did beat Stephon Gilmore pretty cleanly on an out route, and it was going to be the first catch that Gilmore had allowed all of camp. And Gilmore has basically shut down every single receiver that's even come close to him. Like, he's just been absolutely dominating these other receivers. So the fact that N'Keal actually got open against him and was in a position to make a catch is a good, you know, is a great sign. I think the other good thing is that you are seeing some of the little details in his releases and his route breaks that the coaching from Joe Judge and Troy Brown and the rest of the staff is starting to take effect. Like, you can see those little small increments of improvement, especially from beating press coverage, which I think was a big concern on his college tape. His footwork and his hand usage at the line of scrimmage against press coverage is much better than I think it was in the spring during mini camp. So that's good news. There are small improvements, and he is getting open at times. The other good news is that when you throw the ball up to him and he's one-on-one, it is probably 75-25 that he's going to catch it. You know, that contested catch ability is apparent. He's caught in he caught two today that were like that. He caught one over the weekend on a back shoulder fade where Brian Hoyer just threw it on his back shoulder and he boxed out J.C. Jackson and caught it in the end zone for a touchdown, probably his best play of camp. So I think that those are all good things. The flashes are there, I guess, is what the big picture way of saying it. The problem is that, and as we have kind of grown accustomed to in New England, it's all about the details in the system, right? It's all about the little things. And the little things right now in terms of him lining up correctly and catching the ball consistently and creating those little bits of separation out of his stems, those things still need some work. And I think it's still very much a work in progress, which is not that crazy for a rookie. Obviously, that's a week into his training camp. I think the overall theme, though, with the rookies that I wanted to hit on was just that there was a ton of expectations, even for last year's draft class too, for these young guys. Like, yeah. I think everybody really loved this draft class and really loved last year's draft class. You get Isaiah Wynn back, you get Jawan Bentley back, and it felt like that they were all going to kind of take the league by storm, and the veterans that are still around in New England are like, not so fast, my friend. You know, right. Like, these guys are young and they're up and coming, but they got a long way to go, and they're not – nobody has kind of, from this rookie class, Nikhil included, has kind of, like, just blown the doors off of camp and been, yeah, like, one of the best players on the field. And I think that that's totally normal for a rookie class, but I think that the expectations might have been a little bit higher.
Right, and, you know, for Nikhil especially with this – with the question marks surrounding this wide receiver group and, you know – with no Gronkowski on the field anymore.
Yeah.
As far as pass catchers, they drafted a receiver in the first round for a reason.
Right.
So that just puts a little extra weight on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just sort of hope that he starts catching on faster, but it's one of those things where you're just going to sort of have to be patient a little bit, you know, whether you like it or not, because he is a rookie. And there's going to be things that he does well, and then, you know, he's going to look like a rookie. So I feel like, you know, like I said, you know, the fact that Edelman's not there, like, the more reps, the better. Even the bad ones, there's things you can learn from. You just got to keep having him out there and just working him as much as possible till he gets it.
Yeah, and I think that the offensive players today, especially, we actually spoke to Tom Brady, we spoke to James White, we spoke to Ben Watson, and it's starting to get frustrating for them because they're just getting their ass handed to them by the defense.
Yeah.
They put the pads on, and it's starting to – you can tell that they're starting to get frustrated by it, and they're just like – Tom Brady just said, like, it's hard for us to complete a pass against our secondary right now. Just a pass. So I think that that is – the good news is that the couple of passes they did complete today were Nikhil boxing guys out and just going up above the defense and just winning 50-50 balls. So, you know, there is some good and some bad. But let's talk about this wide receiver group, because there are some names that, you know, this is a wide open competition. Like, anybody could make this roster out of these guys. So there are some names that are definitely kind of, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has heard of them in Twitter or our notes, you know, me and the other beat writers. But the first one is kind of the name of camp so far, I would say, and that's Maurice Harris, who – I think the biggest thing with him, we were talking about it before, is that he has just somehow picked up this offense just instantly. Like, he looks like he's been in this offense for a couple of years now. Now, he's not the most explosive player. He's not the most twitchy player. Like, he's not creating, like, 10 yards of separation out of his breaks or running away from guys consistently. But he just knows how to get open. You know, he just is crafty, and he just knows how to get open, and he's got great hands.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you watch some of his film from the Redskins, and you worry about him, like, actually separating. Like, he can't even leave a linebacker in the dust. But, like, he, you know, he'll be able to, like, make the catch if it's there in his radius. So, you know, and again, like, right now at the wide receiver group, you take what you can get.
Yeah,
you know, it's like if he's somebody that can, you know, like you say, be a little, heady in terms of finding the soft spots in the zone and knowing how to use this man, create leverage, then you do that and like, you'll take that, you know. Right now, with Gronkowski gone, like I said, Nettleman off the field, you just want to find somebody who can get open and catch the ball.
You can definitely do that.
So that's just going to keep winning him points. Now, I would definitely want to see him, start doing it in preseason games and being real consistent. Find something, anyone who can really sort of separate themselves from the pack. And, it looks like so far he's doing that.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll ever get to 2 years ago Chris Hogan, when Chris Hogan was really, really good for the Patriots. But in that Chris Hogan role where he's playing a little bit outside, a little bit in the slot, and he's kind of moving around the formation snap to snap, he has the kind of wherewithal and the intelligence to do something like that. And he said, actually, I asked him if he's learning just one spot. Is he learning the Z receiver role or the X or whatever? And he said he's learning all of them. So I think he realizes that his versatility, his reliability, his hands, these are all things that are going to kind of get him to stick here in New England, because it's not going to be that he's like this explosive athlete, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's, he's going to be one of those guys that I think Tom Brady's really going to like, and is already starting to really like, because he just gets it. He just gets how to get open and he doesn't make mistakes. He actually had a play in red zone that Brady was amped about afterwards, and it looked like just like a little kind of option route, maybe one of their juke series routes where you go in or out based off the leverage, and he made the right decision. He sat down in the soft spot of the zone and made the catch, and Brady was just like, yes, yeah, that's exactly, just do that. Like, I don't need you to like change the game,
right.
Like, just like get open, make the right read based off of the coverage and catch the ball. And that's exactly what Maurice Harris did. And that's exactly what he's done all of camp. And I think that's, kind of why his name is starting to pop. The next name on the list, who I think I've a little bit higher on his camp so far than maybe some of the other guys that have been down there, but Braxton Berrios looks to me like a more polished receiver right now than he did last year. Just a little bit more explosive and a little bit more attention to detail at the top of the route. And it's starting to show, I think. He had a rough day today in one-on-ones, as did pretty much all the receivers. But he seems to be the type of guy that could maybe be, give them like a discount Amendola, which I think is what we all kind of wanted him to be.
Yeah, and I think, that's such an important role in this offense, that, you want somebody like him to have made the steps forward that he has. Everybody talks about the guys last year who were sort of on the team but kind of redshirted as rookies. And if those guys, sort of learn and get a little bit better, then there's been some hope that some of them can contribute. And so, if Berrios can be that guy again, you just want these guys to, sort of give you something. And, I think if he can provide a little bit of anything there, and in addition be somewhat of a threat on returns, be somebody like he was in college, who was a third down monster, just somebody who could come through in the big games. Like, the Berrios to me, was in college at least, was somebody that was his best when like there was something on the line.
Yeah.
And not to go too deep into the Amendola comparison, but like, that's kind of like, it kind of makes sense with that. The more competitive the situation, like, usually the better you got out of Braxton Berrios. So I'm really interested to see what he looks like in these preseason games. It sort of continues with him, but he's always been one of these guys that, when you need him the most, he sort of comes through. And so, hopefully he's sort of growing into that right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just watching him, from the difference between this season and last season, is just he just seems to have found maybe one more gear Like his routes just seem a little bit more explosive than they did last year. And he really started camp hot, and he's kind of cooled off since. But he actually had a really nice route over the weekend. It was the first catch that he made on a pass from Tom Brady in his career, maybe, honestly, in like a competitive 11-on-11 type drill. And he came across the middle. He actually juked Jonathan Jones out and was wide open on a crosser at you know, kind of the intermediate level. And Brady threw it over the linebackers and right to Braxton, and Braxton scored a touchdown on it. Even if they weren't tackling at the time, but there was nobody within 10 yards of them that was going to tackle him. And that was like kind of when I was like, okay, that's probably the most crisp route that I've ever seen him run at the NFL level. Yeah. And that was kind of like what really stood out. Now, and then, you know, the other element of it too is what you mentioned with the returns. He's been working with punts and kickoffs. I think punts is probably more where he'll be at, because I'm not sure that he has that like electric speed that they probably would like to have back there for a kickoff, but he could probably return kicks too. And I just think that having Edelman is such an important player on this team that taking him off some of the punt returns and having some of that Edelman insurance is just so massive, I think, for this team in general. And I really think that Berrios could do that. I mean, I'm not, like you said, like, we're not comparing him right now to Danny Amendola. Like, Danny Amendola is obviously, you know, a great, all-time great Patriot, I would say, at this point. But at the same time, I think that, you know, Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman and Wes Welker and all those guys were rookies and second year players once too, you know. Yeah. And you can just, you keep working at it, and you can kind of see the glimpses of it. And he's saying all the right things, and you can tell that he's really treating this like it's, you know, do or die for him, and it's showing. The last receiver that we wanted to touch on, Jacoby Myers, who I think has a pretty good chance to be, he's definitely the leader in the clubhouse out of the undrafted rookies. Like, if there's going to be an undrafted rookie that makes this team and it's not Jacoby Myers, then I'm going to be pretty surprised. He had a great catch today in 7-on-7s over Keon Cross, and just coming over the middle, and he like can get to a different level when he, you know, like when he jumps and reaches up, he's like at level 10 and the other guys can only get to like 7 or 8. So that's part of his game. He's big. He's got a good catch radius, but he also is, you know, kind of has a little bit of Maurice Harris in him, honestly, to the point where like he just kind of knows how to get open. He's got a good feel against zone. He actually was recruited to NC State as a quarterback, and he was a high school quarterback. And I think some of that processing from a coverage standpoint of the quarterback, and he said that he mentioned one thing that I hadn't heard a converted receiver say before, and that was that he knows the quarterback's internal clock, and he knows, like, if he's not open within 2.5 or 3 seconds, then he's might as well not be out there, you know? And I think that that's an interesting element to it, you know, that he knows the internal clock, and he said he runs his routes with that internal clock, you know, in his head like a quarterback. So if he's not getting out of his break in enough time to, you know, give himself a chance, then he knows that he's doing something wrong.
Yeah, I remember when we were watching the Ryan Finley film.
Yeah.
Getting ready for our sort of draft series.
Yeah.
We were both sort of remarking about how good the NC State receivers were. And I didn't even really realize that he was draft eligible, because nobody was really talking about him.
Yeah.
And so, like, but we're both saying how good those receivers were. And, you know, he's like, you could tell even then, like, a big physical guy. Like, kind of like, you know, somebody that had what I liked about him a lot was sort of his body control.
Yeah.
You know, both before and after, like his breaks and stuff like that. So he has good hands. I think he's kind of like, you know, if you're going for all these contested catch guys, I kind of feel like Myers is sort of in the same mold. You know, like he's not like some burner or anything like that. But like if it's a sort of tight quarter situation, I feel good about him coming down with the ball. So yeah, I mean, like he's again like one of these bigger receivers that seems, you know, the Belichick seems to be like targeting a little bit more now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he's obviously a talented guy, and I think it also speaks to how much depth there was at wide receiver in this year's draft class, because I think like a lot of years this is a guy that gets drafted.
Yeah, it's interesting because he didn't get drafted, and Kelvin Harmon really fell, I think, to the sixth round it was or something like that, which was just kind of one of the surprises of the draft. The NC State wide receiver coach, whoever he is, like that guy, like get a hold of that guy if you're a big time programmer, an NFL team, because Jacoby Myers, Kelvin Harmon, those guys just run routes the right way. You know, they just really understand the details, and they're so strong at the catch point, and they really have a great approach to catching the ball in general. And you see that with Myers. I think it is interesting though. You brought up the big receivers, and it just got me thinking, like, we aren't seeing a lot of these guys separate a ton against the defensive backs. And obviously that's kind of to be expected because the defensive backs are really, really good. But at the same time, like that's not the type of guys these guys are, you know, like N'Keal Harry, Jacoby Myers, Maurice Harris, these guys are not the type of guys that are going to be like Odell or Antonio Brown and creating like 15 yards of separation.
Right.
You know, these are guys that are brought in here for size and really catch radius and the ability to box guys out. And maybe, you know, there's some element to truth to all of that kind of theory of why they're doing this. And you kind of watch Tom Brady play with these guys, and yeah, they need like some work in terms of chemistry and you know, everybody getting on the same page and stuff like that. But you can tell like Brady's ability to control the ball and like put the ball in places where only his guy can get it. A lot of these guys have the capability to just catch those types of passes,
exactly. You
know, and contort their bodies and go up and get balls. And Brady's going to throw it, you know, off the wrong shoulder or low or, you know, outside where you have to kind of step your toes on the sideline or whatever the case may be. A lot of these guys are really good at doing that. So maybe that is where we're headed with all this, because I think when you watch these training camp practices and you watch, you know, every single corner they roll out there seems to just be able to stay strapped to every single guy. And you're like, well, you know, what's going on here? And you kind of do think about it. And, you know, once that chemistry starts to brew with these guys, you know, maybe that's where they're going with it. Let's talk about left tackle, because I almost wanted to lead the show with this, because I think that this is probably right now the biggest question mark on the team, offense, defense, special teams, period. So right now that we put Dan Skipper on our riser list, because I think that people should know who Dan Skipper is, especially before the first preseason game next week. So I think that that's a big and kind of important name to know. He's been starting with the ones at left tackle next to Joe Tooney for the last couple of days. What is he? He's 6'9", 6'10", 310 pounds. He's built basically almost identical to Nate Solder. They're very, very close in height and weight and all that, arm length and all that good stuff. And Belichick was actually asked about Dan Skipper, and he said just from a measurable standpoint, he's a lot like Solder. So that's kind of what he looks like. But in terms of what he's been doing on the practice field, I don't see a starting left tackle when I watch him play. I just don't, you know, no, obviously no offense to him or whatever. I'm sure he could be a serviceable swing tackle or a third or fourth guy on the depth chart. But right now, I think the two main things that I'm seeing with him, one, his height makes it really, really difficult if he doesn't bend his knees to get underneath guys and leverage blocks in the running game. And he basically is stalemating guys is like a good thing, right? You know, like as long as he's not getting blown backwards, he's like, we're in a good shape. And then in pass protection, it's basically the same thing. His feet are quick. He's able to kind of slide and stay in front of guys. He's had a few good reps in one-on-ones doing that, just moving side to side. And you can see kind of the athleticism, but today, Yufaba Kamalu put him on his ass with a long arm. And that's not an, like, that's, Yufaba Kamalu is a borderline Ross Rule player. So we're not talking about, like, Michael Bennett doing it or something like that.
Right.
So that is definitely worrisome. His power, just in general, and his ability to create leverage and drive is just, it's just not there where you'd want it to be. But listen, I'm obviously not Dante Scarnecchia, and Scarnecchia obviously sees something in him to be putting him up there with the starters.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where Scarnecchia is just going to have to work with him on the fundamentals of getting that, getting down as quickly as possible in terms of and stuff like that. That's, he's looking at him like a mold of clay, basically.
Exactly. Right? He's a big mold of clay. Like, he's athletic, he's lean, he's tall, that he's got the length that they want him to have. He's exactly a mold of clay.
Right? Yeah, but like, you don't want that this late.
No.
You kind of want, you want like, especially at left tackle. I mean, out of all the positions, you don't want to be sort of getting the guy, like teaching him the ropes. It's just too high a learning curve. And so I think it's a big worry, you know, like, I mean, I'd feel a lot differently, if Wynn was fine, or, you know, the circumstances were a little bit different with a more experienced guy, then this wouldn't be like too big of a worry. But like, you know, you basically, if he's starting in week one, like, you have every right to be concerned.
I just don't see how it can happen. You know, just a little bit more background on him, because I really don't think anybody has any clue who this guy is, and rightfully so. Like, I'm not like getting on people for not knowing him. He was an undrafted rookie. Dallas signed him. He's been in the league since 2017. He has played 10 total NFL snaps in a regular season game. 10. He played 10 at right tackle last year, and I know it's just PFF grade, but it was not a good start. But let me put it to you that way. You know, they had him graded, I think, in like a 50 out of 100 or something like that for the 10 snaps that he played. So he's really a project. And I think the biggest thing is that, you know, first of all, I think that they're falling back on the fact that they can start Joe Tooney there and probably be fine in the time being. Isaiah Wynn has just done absolutely nothing. Like, they're taking it as slow can be. Now, August 17th is the anniversary of his injury. A year, it'll become a full year at that point. And I did talk to you know, a few like Twitter doctors about this, and they do say that there is a lot of data about Achilles injuries that if you come back too early, it's really the odds of re-injury are very high. So you really need to wait until until it's, you know, really, really, really ready to go. So I think that there is kind of maybe they know something that we don't about Isaiah Wynn, and maybe he's ready to go in a couple of weeks, and maybe they start Tooney to start the season at left tackle, but then Wynn goes in there, you know, as soon as he's ready. And Skipper right now might just be getting all these reps because he is that moldable piece of clay. And they're just kind of trying to work him out and see what he can develop into with some added reps with a Wynn sitting out. So maybe this whole Skipper thing is just an experiment, I guess is what I'm getting at, just to see what they can get out of him. But I have seen them start like Jordan Devey in week one before and like some other guys that are not so good. So that's, like you said, left tackle is just not a position that you want to do that at. You start a guard or a center, like, obviously it's still, you know, a big deal that, you know, a guy that like a Jordan Devey, but you can still kind of make up for that, you know. You slide the protection, you double, you have them combo block, you do that kind of stuff in the middle where there's more, you know, it's a tighter space at the center, and the other guard can really help them out a lot more. You put a turnstile at tackle in this league. I mean, week one, they have Pittsburgh. They got T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree coming off the edge.
Yeah, forget about it.
Yeah, you put a guy that is going to be a liability. I mean, yeah, you can chip. Yeah, you can leave the tight end in. You can block with the running back out of the backfield. But then you have to remember, when you do that kind of stuff, you only have four guys in the pass route at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and you're taking a lot away from what you can do schematically in terms of the route combination. So you don't want to have to do that. And last year, obviously, with Trent Brown and Marcus Cannon, they did not have to do that at all most of the time. And they did obviously have some max protect play action stuff, and they use the running backs to chip a little bit against Kansas City in the AFC title game because of those guys, Dee Ford and Justin Houston. But they, for the most part, it was Cannon and Brown one-on-one with whoever they had, and it worked out. Mm-hmm. It's obviously, I'm talking about it a lot because it's just, I think it's a really big question mark right now.
Yeah, it's huge.
To the point where they're starting to, I mean, I know we didn't really want to get too much into Trent Williams, but like there's starting to be rumors where the rest of the league is aware of the fact that they have no tackle depth. And you know, it's becoming a point of like, are they going to have to make a trade at that position? All right, let's talk about some of the tight ends. Matt Lacoste being the big one. Not quite like on the Skipper journeyman trail. Skipper has been on 4 teams, I think it is, in the 2 years that he's been in the league. Lacoste has been in a bunch of teams too, but he started camp hot again, kind of like Berrios. He started hot. He's kind of cooled off a little bit now. But I think that the stuff that held over from June and in the mini camps is kind of showing up again, where he can run. He can really run. Like, this is a guy that's got some speed and he's got good hands. And, you know, he's not going to be a difference maker or a game changer, but he can be a reliable tight end, I think, or probably the second tight end behind Ben Watson, but maybe for those first 4 weeks, be the starter.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen of Lacoste in the past, is like a decent receiver, you know, somebody who can be like flexed out a little bit. I don't necessarily see him as a like any kind of dominant blocker, though.
No,
and I just don't think anyone on the tight end depth chart is really, you know, somebody who's sort of a more complete tight end who you're going to want there on every snap. Like, all these guys sort of have like specific skills that, you know, may or may not, you know, pan out over the course of the season. So, you know, with Lacoste, like, you know, maybe move him around. He seems like a versatile guy, but just like not somebody who's going to be an impact run blocker or, you know, but maybe he's somebody they put, you know, next to Skipper if he's out there, you know, act as like a double tackle. But no, I think he could be like, you know, an asset in the passing game, I think, but people just have to, you know, sort of temper their expectations of just what that, you know, how good he would be. But, you know, I think, you know, with this tight end group, it would be scarier if it was like at a more, you know, if it was at a position that was, you know, with a like left tackle.
Right.
But because they just really don't have much you can depend on. Like, yeah. is there really anybody in this tight end group where you say, oh wow, you know, this will, he'll really fill in for Gronkowski and like sort of, you know, save the day? I don't think you have anybody there, which sort of like, I mean, the, and as we're sort of looking at the offense right now, you're really searching for playmakers outside of Edelman and the running backs. And everybody else is sort of an unknown.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, not that any of us expected any of these guys to be able to replace Gronk, but when you watch it on the field and you watch 11s and stuff like that, it's just apparent that they are really going to miss Gronk. Like, there's just nobody that can even come close to being as good of a receiver or as good of a blocker as him in this tight end group. They can't do either one of those things as good as Gronkowski could. So
let alone both in one guy.
Right, exactly. So I think the biggest thing for Lacoste, you know, he's made some nice grabs. He actually had one of the best catches of camp going over the top of Landon Roberts up the seam and, you know, kind of mossed him and had like kind of a Gronkowski type catch. And that was, you know, he's been okay in the receiving game. The running game so far, they kind of, the way that they do it nowadays, because all the padding practices and the tackling, it's so light in these camps now. Like, it's like 10 years ago these guys were like killing each other. Now, right, it's not like really that drastic, but in the running game, like, this group right now, because they have a liability at left tackle and they don't really have a tight end that can move anybody, like, they're having trouble running off the edge. Like, they, like, really are, they can run it to the right because Marcus Cannon and Shaq Mason are just destroying people like usual, but they're having some trouble running the ball and really pushing and moving this defensive line. Over the weekend, they had the defensive line had a goal line stand against this running game. They had two straight plays at like the one or the two, and they tried to run them in both times, and they just created zero movement. You know, just nobody moved. And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about, obviously, about Gronk and all the good things that he did. And I can't stress enough that his blocking in the running game is just going to be such a huge loss for this team, unless they're going to have to really reinvent themselves here in terms of being an offense. Like, I think that a lot of people kind of saw Gronk last year and they saw that he wasn't like, you know, all pro, you know, Gronk. But he was still really, really good. And I think that, you know, they can make it work in other ways. Obviously, there's other ways to move the ball, but I don't know if this team is going to resemble anything that it was last year in terms of what the tight end position is going to give you. And Watson's been okay too. Like, Watson's had some nice catches, some nice plays, and he's like a reliable, like, you can tell that he's a veteran type thing. And Lacoste, I think, has some upside. Steven Anderson's like been all right. Like, he's had some good days. And then he's, you know, kind of been disappearing some other days, but he's more of like a move tight end. Like, he's definitely more of like a big wide receiver than an inline guy. So yeah, they really don't have an impact player at tight end. And you know, without Edelman out there at receiver, they don't, you know, and Nikhil kind of still figuring things out, they don't really have an impact player at wide receiver either. So they need, you know, not that they need Edelman to come back for training camp, but they need Edelman to, you know, be the kind of the machine in this offense, to kind of be the motor. And then obviously the running backs too. All right, let's talk about the defense, because it's so much more positive. And it's just, like, so much more fun to talk about. The defense has been absolutely balling out, and like, they are basically like, they're like a hockey line. Like, they're like a hockey team. Like, they can just like run lines of guys out there against the offense, and like, all of them can play. It's like, yeah, they have like 22, 23 guys that are like NFL caliber players at their position. The guy that I wanted to start with was Jamie Collins, who is just like basically picking up where he left off when he left. Like, he's just been basically running with the starters defensively, playing mostly inside linebacker off the ball. He has played or taken a few snaps as like kind of an edge guy, but I think that their plan is to have him play off the ball linebacker, which means that if that's the case, they go three deep at that position. And if we want to count Van Noy and Hightower as like potential guys there, then obviously we're talking about five deep. But like, I think that Van Noy and Hightower, they would really like to play closer to the line of scrimmage most of the time as like the Will and the Sam, whereas Collins, Landon Roberts, and obviously Juwan Bentley, that they go three deep at Mike linebacker right now.
Yeah, and those are – that's what you want. Like, I mean, like, I, you know, I've always thought whenever I watched Collins in training camp, it, like, when he hits you in training camp and you're that close to it, you feel it, man.
Yeah.
Like,
he's been just athletically and just – in terms of like effort level, he's been bringing it for sure.
Yeah. So that's a plus. I mean, like, you know, the questions with him have, you know, been talked about ad nauseum in terms of his, you know, ability to sort of play within the system and not freelance and all that stuff. But, you know, if he's, you know, not, like we've talked about, he's not necessarily the only guy they're depending on there, then you can feel a little bit better about maybe him, you know, not, you know, sticking to the script as much and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully, you know, this time around, he has a better grasp of the defense, better grasp of what Bill wants him to do. But just as a like an athlete back there and somebody who can really set the tone when he like hits you, you know, and just get everybody else fired up. I mean, you know, the guy's really a playmaker. I think you just really have to like what they have at linebacker in general.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch. I mean, like I said, like, at every position, it's kind of been like a hockey team, but at linebacker especially, like, they can move those guys all around. All those guys can play multiple spots and do it well. They can play, you know, Van Noy and Hightower off the ball. They can play them on the ball. They can play do the same thing with Collins. Bentley and Roberts are basically neck and neck in terms of like how good those two guys are to play off, you know, at Mike and off the ball. It's like really, you know, it's kind of incredible to watch how far this position has come, because like it feels like for years, you know, recently, especially really since they traded Collins, it's like been kind of a weakness. I think the biggest thing with Collins though is that, like, because they have so many guys that are going to be positionally sound and all those types of things, the ball is flowing to him a lot. And he's just kind of able to just be an athlete and just tackle people, you know, and, you know, make plays on the ball, and they keeping him clean a lot of the time. And he's not having to defeat blockers constantly. And, you know, they haven't done a ton of like blitzing, obviously, because they're not going to just like throw random blitzes at the offense right now in like the first week of training camp. But they've been able to kind of move him around a decent amount in terms of where he's going to be in the pass rush too. So I think that he's early returns and everything that you hear about him from the team, and he's saying all the right things. Like, he realizes that this is his last chance. You know, like, if he doesn't play well here in New England, then like next year, like, he probably will be on a team because he's so athletic and so gifted. But like, this might be his last chance at actually, like, you know, returning to where he was in 2014 and being like a real impact player. And he's taking it by the horns right now. I mean, he's playing really, really well. So, you know, this linebacker group is just it's not just that it's deep. Like, these are playmakers. Like, these are guys that are going to make plays for this team. You know, Hightower and Van Noy obviously made plays for them at, you know, multiple times last year. And I think that Collins and the rest of those guys are going to kind of fall in suit. Bentley, I think there's a lot of expectations for him too. He's been okay. He looks like he might be a little bit out of shape, you know, just dealing with rehabbing that pec injury. And maybe he wasn't able to kind of, get up to speed in terms of his conditioning the way that he wanted to while he was rehabbing. So he's kind of working his way into shape right now, I would say. But, you know, he still has a lot of promise too. Let's go into the secondary, where it's, again, just like, how many guys could they possibly keep? Keon,
maybe they can turn one of these guys into a receiver or a left tackle or a tight end.
Yeah, maybe they could like try to, you know, like Obi out at wide receiver or something. Although I did see the safeties like doing a drill today where they were like dropping into a half field zone or something like that and making plays on the ball. And I think like every single one of them dropped it. And so maybe, you know, I like turned to somebody, I was like, this is why they play defensive back,
right.
Receiver, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe not so much for those guys playing receiver, but Keon Crossan, listen, like, this is, you know, it stinks because I think Crossan is probably trending towards being an NFL corner, like a guy that should be on a top five depth chart type thing, but there's just so many numbers there that it's tough. But like, in terms of like what they're doing on the field, like, Keon Crossan is 100% outplaying Duke Dawson right now. Like, there's no, and if you just kind of took away the draft stock, you know, the fact that they invested the second round pick in Duke Dawson and Keon was the seventh round pick, like, you would pick Keon on the team every single time.
Yeah, and if you listened to us back then, you knew that was kind of
yeah. So, we don't brag a lot, but we were 100% saying Keon was better than Duke Dawson.
Yes, we were.
Like, 100%.
But no, I mean, all joking aside, I think Keon, he's one of those guys where, you know, when they took him out of the draft, he was playing against competition he was so much better than.
Yeah.
That, like, you knew that that would be something that he would have to sort of overcome once he got to the NFL. It becomes even of a steeper hurdle because all of a sudden you're playing against like really great players.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure there were things that he had to work out technique wise and fundamental wise. But it sounds like, you know, I mean, they definitely wanted to keep a guy with his athleticism and speed on the special teams unit.
Yeah.
And like, in that respect, I think he's got a roster spot.
Yeah.
Because like he's just like tremendous as like a gunner and like coming down on kickoffs. But you know, with that, he's somebody who can really sort of develop his game as a defensive back, as a corner, just his coverage skills. You know, the thing that, you know, sometimes I look at with him is a little bit stiff when covering somebody with a bit, little bit more fluid movements in and out of their breaks. But
yeah,
his recovery speed is so good that sometimes he can make up for that. So, you know, we were very high on him right away. I think, you know, from a pure athletic standpoint, he was already there. It was just a matter of him, you know, picking up the little things and adjusting to the speed of the game after, you know, playing at a much smaller level in college. But, you know, you always want, you know, as many good corners on your team as possible in today's NFL. So I'd be surprised if he didn't make the team just because of his special teams capabilities. But to see that he's making so much progress as a corner, you know, is really a nice thing to see.
Yeah, last year, actually, I was at over Rams availability before the Super Bowl, and they make all the assistant coaches available during Super Bowl week. And I was talking to the Rams special teams coach about some of the special teams aces, if you will, for the Patriots. And I was actually asking him about Slater, but he actually brought up Keon. He was like, that number 35, like, that guy on kickoffs, like, we got to block him. Like, they knew back then that he was like, and a lot of the teammates too, Slater, Brandon King, Nate Ebner, a lot of those guys were saying, like, he's coming. Like, Keon is like the next, like, you know, ace special team player for the Patriots. And towards the end of last year, it definitely started to show. Like, he was like often the first guy down there on kickoffs.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, he can absolute fly. I think that that's like the biggest thing too about his college tape to now is in college, especially because the level of competition he was at, he could just run, you know, like, yeah, he could just like outrun everybody. So it didn't really matter if he made some of the little mistakes. Now, obviously, it's mattering because everybody can run at this level, you know, not as fast as he can, but, you know, fast enough to, you know, make him pay for those mistakes. So right, that's the biggest thing. I think that this year, you know, his ball skills, which were apparent in his college tape, like, he had, you know, pass breakups all over the place on his college tape. He's starting to get to his hands on the ball more this year than he did last year, which is a really good sign. I think last year there were just times, and he played a little bit against the Jets. He played like 10 snaps against the Chiefs where he was just losing like right at the top of the route, like that half a step. And he just wasn't able to make it up against these guys because everybody's so fast. And he didn't have the length and didn't have kind of the ball skills to make a play on the ball after he was already beat a little bit. And now I think he's starting to be able to do that a little bit more. So I think that that's really good news. This is like DBU or something like that, the Patriots at this point.
Yeah.
Like, they just have so many guys that can play. We're going to talk about Obi here in a second, but just quickly, D'Angelo Ross, who's another undrafted guy that they picked up this year, he can play too. Like, they probably found another undrafted guy. Like, you know, I don't know if he's like a J.C. Jackson good or a Malcolm Butler good, but like, he might be like a Craven LeBlanc good. You know, like,
yeah,
he's a guy that, like, he's going to get cut and he's probably going to get picked up if he shows out well in the preseason games like he has in training camp and the practices. Today, they were doing one-on-ones and like the whole sideline was just like going crazy because he just was shutting down everybody. Like, they like Berrios, Dontrell Inman, Gunnar Olszewski, like the whole sideline, he broke up a pass like on his last rep for Gunnar, and like all of the veterans are just like jumping around him. They're just like,
yeah,
so jacked up because like they know he can play. So D'Angelo Ross is another name to look out for. Yeah, they go like 7 or 8 deep at corner at this point with guys that can play. All right, safety, finally, last name we wanted to get here, Obi Melifonwu, who him and Terrence Brooks, I don't know what the hell they're doing with Terrence Brooks. Like, everyone, they signed him as like a special teamer, and now he's playing starting with the defense. So we'll see where that goes. But Obi is, you know, definitely for the most part playing with the second team, but he's starting to like kind of creep into some first team reps a little bit too, and they're starting to give him a chance. He's playing strong safety mostly, playing a little bit more closer to the line of scrimmage, matching up against tight ends. He made a great play on a kind of corner route to Ben Wasson in the back of the end zone. He picked it off a Brian Hoyer pass, one of the plays of the day over the weekend. So he's making plays. He's making progress. It's clear that he's an NFL athlete. I think that everyone knew that. But it's just kind of like, I would say, an attention to detail and also just focus. Like sometimes he loses a little bit of focus and he kind of lets himself get beat. But he's had a nice camp too.
Yeah, and it's a nice problem to have when you got a guy like that who you don't necessarily need at this point. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's somebody that I think could be an asset.
Yeah.
But they're just so deep. They're just a little bit old at some of those spots, you know. So
yeah, that's the biggest thing I think is like he's 25 and he clearly can play. He's maybe not like starting level yet, but he's a nice reserve with a lot of upside. And like with Devin and Daron Harmon and Patrick Chung. Devin and Patrick Chung are on the wrong side of 30. Duran's 28. Like, it might be time to start just, like, kind of stashing a guy like Obi.
Yeah. And, you know, it's he's also seemingly one of those guys, like, kind of a rover type, you know, like somebody like a chess piece you can sort of move around.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, that's always valuable. That, you know, like, and the Patriots always value guys like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, with him, the more reps he gets, the more he learns, it's something that he's somebody that, you know, if they kept him on the team, you know, he could be somebody like 1, 2, 3 years down the line, be somebody who's, you know, really quite good for them because they know how to use guys like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's to me, for him, it's all about, you know, being a sponge, you know, getting up, learning as much of the playbook and like the different things he can be good at and sort of, you know, getting up to that level where he can do the various things they ask of him without having to think too much.
Yeah, I think that he is thinking a little bit still, but I think that it has helped him that he came in halfway through last year. So he's kind of has a leg up a little bit in that respect as to what they're kind of doing. But I definitely think that you hit the nail about them being really knowing how to use a guy like him. And I think that he, you know, he's not Patrick Chung, but like he can probably somewhere down the road, 2, 3 years, like be a guy that does match up against tight ends. And kind of plays that role a little bit. I don't think that they're going to, like, put him in the slot anytime soon or give him all the responsibility that they give Patrick Chung. But I think that there is hope for him in that kind of role. And he's really – I mean, I know these tight ends, we just talked about how none of them are, like, really that special. But he has really been able to kind of man up against most of these tight ends and hold his own for the most part. So I think that there's – promise with Obi and enough kind of hope with him for the future that hanging on to a guy like that with such an old tight safety group is probably in, you know, the team's best interest if they can fit him on the roster. It's just like he's every single time I do a roster projection, he's the 54th guy. And right. It's like, who do you cut? Are you cutting the extra lineman? Are you cutting a linebacker? Like, are we going to cut a Landon Roberts to keep Obi or, you know, something like that? And it's just like it's like a difficult equation to come up with. I think we just like basically ran through the entire team. like it wasn't like all 90 guys, but we got to like, you know, like 25 of them.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else that like we didn't hit that you like are curious about or anything like that?
Not that comes to mind off the top of my head. I think we're good for now.
I think we covered it. All right. What do you got to tease? We can get to that part of this.
Yeah, just a lot of high school and college football and high school and college lacrosse right now. With Mass Varsity, we're going to be kicking off our 40-team MIA countdown to the start of the season.
I always like to hear MIAA.
Yeah, exactly. And on actually tomorrow night is the New England championship for the Northeast 7-on-7 finals. There are, I believe, 10 teams, two five pool brackets, and then a semifinal and final. Some actually really, really talented kids out there. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Very cool. On clnsmedia.com, everything is either on clnsmedia.com or the CLNS Media YouTube page. Check that out. Me, Alex Barth, Sierra Goodwill, Trags was down there over the weekend. We really have been down there every day. I've been down there every day, and we're hitting it wall to wall. All of my notebooks you can find on the website with observations from all the various practices. Coming down the road, obviously, we'll be in Detroit next week. I'm also working on a piece right now that I'm excited about, talking to some of the offensive linemen of what exactly it's like to go through training camp with Dante Scarnecchia. I think that, like, he's kind of like this mythological figure that, like, we don't get a ton of opportunities to talk to, Scar. So I think it's kind of cool to, you know, they've had three offensive linemen retire this summer. So, like, obviously he's, like, working them pretty hard. If, like, these guys are just like, I'm just going to, you know, bow out. So I've been trying to kind of, like, get a pulse of what, you know, how hard is it exactly? What kind of hard is it? Those kind of things. And I think that'll be really cool. And, I mean, we're a week away at this point from the first preseason game, joint practices next week in Detroit, then joint practices in Tennessee in the Tennessee preseason game. And then they'll be back home, obviously, for games 3 and 4. So, you know, at that point, the practices will probably be closed to everybody, but we'll still be able to have some home games there at the end of the preseason. And then, you know, week one's right around the corner. We're not that far away, but, we'll be back next week. I'll be in Detroit. We'll do something about the joint practices and what's going on down there with old friend Matty P. We're going to see Matty P and the Detroit Lions and Trey Flowers and you know, a bunch of other guys down there in Detroit too. So until then, signing off for Adam Curtin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.